Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's the best of the best of the best. Columnist and Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Ken, you've been away too long. Welcome back. It's always wonderful to talk to you.
It's good to be back.
Last week, just so everybody will know, you were expected to be the guest. And then our newsroom staff came tapping on the door and said, come out, because I was broadcasting, and I came out, and they said, the governor wants to do the Capital Connection. So you got put back one week. And I'm not the only one. He seems to be turning over a page with a whole bunch of people. I wonder what's happening.
I think, third term, he knows, I think he recognizes that he may have to turn over a new leaf. Third terms are never easy, so maybe he wants to start on a good footing.
And also, he won the election rather well, and knowing him, there might have been a little bit of there, you know what I mean?
No, not the governor. when he won the primary, he basically had a "I'm better than all of you" press conference with the media. It's certainly not beyond the realm of possibility.
Yeah, that's great. So anyway, we had an election, and the blue team did extremely well. The one that we want to concentrate on for a moment is the New York State Senate. Because theoretically, this now means that the Assembly and the Senate will be on the same page, that the Senate will be passing all kinds of things that the Republicans in that body had been putting, to bed before. So I'm wondering what you make of all of that.
Look, I mean, I wasn't surprised the Democrats took it. I was surprised at the size of the margin. They're going to have 39, possibly 40, if Sim Clefelder, the Brooklyn Democrat who sits with the Republicans right now, if he goes back, they'll have 40 out of the chamber's 63. I mean, that's stunning. The only person I know who thought it would be that high was Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who's going to be the new Senate Majority Leader. She'd been telling people she thinks they can get to 40. She was right. look, I think a lot of progressive stuff that got blocked by the Senate Republicans, particularly the strengthening of abortion laws, gun control issues, that kind of stuff. I think that's going to get done quickly and early and in the legislative session. So, I think there's going to be a host of things that they want to show that, hey, we're functioning, we're progressive, we're able to do all this stuff. But there are things to watch because 15 of the of the 39 or 40 are not from New York City. And so some of the truly, truly progressive things might have a harder time with that kind of block. Raising taxes on the wealthy, the single-payer health care, if it means raising taxes across the board. Those are issues that are going to be tougher to get through, especially now that you don't just have a handful of suburban and upstate Senate Democrats. You have almost 30% of the conference is made up of people from outside New York City.
That's right. And also, it has been my experience, because I'm old now, that what happens when both houses in a legislature turn Democratic or Republican, that the two houses find ways to fight with each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and look, the Assembly is definitely New York City controlled. They do have upstate and suburban members, but it's really New York City controlled. You're going to see a difference in that kind of philosophy, where I think you'll see more of a block. And by the way, if the Senate Democrats have 15 from outside, and they only have even 40 members, you need 32 to pass something. So there's enough people now from outside New York City that they can block what they don't want to happen. The other thing to watch for is Governor Cuomo, a Democrat. Cuomo has used the Republicans to block things that he may not have wanted, but he didn't want to go on record as saying he didn't want it. He did that for years. His father did that. It's not uncommon for governors to do that. And it doesn't happen. You say, well, don't blame me. Blame the Senate Republicans. Then he used a breakaway group of 8 Democrats. He was looking to use them as the firewall. He got them to come back in April, and I think he saw them as the firewall to block some of the more liberal progressive agenda that may be pushed. 6 of the 8 lost. So now I think he's going to try to exploit the suburban and upstate bloc. He supported a bunch of them, and he had 10 of them sign pledges that, you know, I'm against raising taxes, I'm going to control spending, on-time budgets, all the things that he pushes that's more moderate to conservative fiscally. So I think on some of the more progressive social issues, you'll see that stuff moving. Some of the more progressive economic issues may be tougher, and the governor will be stirring that up behind the scenes as well.
But the original impetus when they get into session is going to be obviously passing some kind of codification of the Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, the governor has said that that's on the agenda. He expects that could happen within the first 30 days. There's gun control measures. I wouldn't be surprised if they pass quickly. The Child Victims Act could get done. Voter reform, electoral reform, potentially ethics reform. You know, all those things that you can consider low-hanging fruit, I think they're going to want to hit the ground running. So some of that stuff in the first 2 months may happen quickly. Now, where you might see some tension start is with the budget, because you have a lot of Democrats, legislative Democrats, who want to raise taxes on the rich to pay for things, whether it's the subways or education. And you have a lot of legislative Democrats who want unified health care, single-payer health care in New York. And that would almost double the budget. And while the governor says he's open to the idea, I think he's going to push to block it or slow it down. So I think that's where you're going to see some of the tension rise once they get to the budget talks, because that's going to be the fight between the more centrist Democrats and the more progressive Democrats.
You mentioned ethics, Ken Lovett of the Daily News. I wanted to ask you about that. I've been watching this. I have a sort of pet peeve. The Congress of the United States prohibits making money on the, quote, outside, which has been a way that a lot of people, maybe not all of them, but quite a few in the legislature have been making out like bandits. Now, the Democrats take the Senate. I'm told by my very good friend Blair Horner that he thinks that may have a chance because it was basically the wealthy Senate-type Republicans who were making out as being able to do outside business because people came to them because they were senators. What do you think of that thesis?
Look, I think that's certainly something that is going to be a priority. It's something the governor has talked about. It's usually the top of his priority list when he talks about ethics reform, banning outside income. Look, there are a lot of Republicans who are lawyers, and it would have impacted them more. There's fewer Democrats it would impact, although you have some, and especially in the Assembly. So I think it's going to definitely be on the table, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of the things they do. You know, the people who don't support banning outside income will make the argument that people in different fields, walks of life, they bring that experience into the legislative chamber. But those who do support it will say that, well, look, you know, it raises the potential for conflict, especially among lawyers and who their clients are and if they have business before the state.
Yeah, you know, it's always interested me that the Assembly has had differences with the Republican Senate, and it was an easy lift for them because when you think about it, even if they didn't want limits on outside income, they could blame it on the Senate. Now, some of the fat cats in the Assembly are going to be, does that mean I can't make any money on the outside? So they may find some reason for being against this. Are you following me?
I agree 100%. I think, you know, and again, that's kind of like what we talked about with the governor, who was able to blame the Republicans for blocking things that he didn't really want to get done. The Assembly was able to do the same thing for a lot of years, and the Senate Republicans were able to do it as well, you know, blaming the Assembly. So I think now the rubber hits the road, and we're going to see where they stand on a lot of issues. I don't think the Child Victims Act is going to be a slam dunk. I think eventually it'll pass. But I think there were concerns that people were willing to look past because they knew it wasn't going to clear the Senate Republicans.
What were some of those concerns?
Well, I think some some of the concerns were, there were due process concerns. And the Child Victims Act basically would extend the statute of limitations to bring cases that for people who are victims of child sex abuse, it would extend the time you can bring either a civil or a criminal case against your accuser. And part of it, and the most controversial aspect, is it would create a one-year look-back window. Basically, it would let you revive old cases that under the current law you can't bring a criminal or a civil complaint. I think some people had problems with that, but you know, knowing that it wasn't going anywhere, they ended up supporting it because it's hard to go on record against child sex abuse victims. I think now there'll be more debate about the details. I do think ultimately they'll have to come to some kind of agreement. Otherwise, they're going to look like liars. But
really?
On a key issue. But we'll see.
Hey, Ken Levitt, I wanted to ask you about somebody you mentioned before because it is of such interest to me. Maybe it's not worthy of bringing up here, but there is Mr. Felder, who has been caucusing. He ran for years as a Democrat, finally ran as a Democrat and a Republican, but who really did guarantee the Republicans the majority, which I thought was reprehensible, but that's just me. And now, will they treat him well? Will the Democrats, now that they've won their side, the Senate, will they embrace him and give him positions and give him chairmanships? Or will they give him the boot in the behind that many people think he deserves?
There is a term known as backbencher, and that's someone who has no power. And the fact that the Democrats now have 39 members minimum means that Simcha Felder no longer matters in the chamber. So whether he stays with the Republicans, whether he comes back, he's lost all his power, all his negotiating stances. And, the governor sent him a letter in February when he was urging him to come back to the Democratic side of the aisle. And he said, you're never going to have more influence than you do now because the chamber was so tightly divided. It was 32-31. And he was the deciding factor. Had he gone back to the Democrats, they would have ended up with the majority once the IDC went back. So now he has no negotiating power. If he doesn't go back, who cares? They still have 39 of the 63 seats. If he goes back, fine. But they're not gonna bend over backwards to bring him back. He comes back with no guarantees. It's like that scene in The Godfather when the senator was trying to shake down Michael Corleone, and Corleone said, "You can have my answer now, Senator. You get nothing." And that's basically what we're gonna see here.
That's great. I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about the Senate. So who will be the leaders in the Senate? You've got Andrea Stewart Cousins, who is clearly the head lady in the whole thing. Now, who becomes number two? Is it Mike Gianaris?
Yeah, Mike Gianaris from Queens. He led the campaign effort, so it would be hard to say no to him. And usually you want to have someone from outside the city as a number two in this kind of cases. But in this case, and people kind of tend to forget this, Andrea Stewart Cousins is from Westchester County. She's not a New York City person. She's from Yonkers. So you would have a Westchester County leader and a Queens deputy leader.
Westchester County, we call that upstate in Yonkers.
Exactly.
You take one step over the line, you're in upstate from the Bronx. I wanted to ask you, if I can, about some of the congressional races. So we see that Delgado rather decisively beats John Faso. That's the one that everybody was looking at across the whole country. Trump came out and said Faso didn't embrace me enough, showing his usual class.
I thought that Faso's response was great. He said, yeah, I didn't endorse him enough and I lost. It might have been even worse. It might have been a worse loss if I did fully embrace all his policies.
But what do you make of that loss?
Look, I think a blue wave really did hit New York. It didn't necessarily hit the country like we thought it would. Certainly they took back the House, and New York was part of that. They picked up three seats out of New York. But in New York, you look at the numbers, and it was just, the Democrats crushed, whether it was the state Senate, whether it was the statewide races. No Republican got even close to 40%. And then in the congressional races, they pick up potentially three seats. And the Faso race was a key race. It was a national race. And I think, look, Delgado worked hard, and I just think it wasn't a year to be a Republican in that area, in a lot of areas in New York, whether it was Trump, whether it was other factors, but I think Trump was the biggest factor.
All I know is that I had a lot of friends. I live in Berkshire County, Massachusetts, who ran across the line to help in that campaign. And I know people who are in other congressional districts who did the same thing. So it's really extraordinary because it just shows you what the Democratic energy was like.
It really was. And in places, look, you know, we knew that was going to be a race. It looks like Claudia Tenney's going down, although that's still up in the air.
That's up there around Utica, for the people who don't know. Yeah.
Around Utica. And then the biggest stunner and probably the biggest sign of the night that the Democrats were going to have a good night was down on Staten Island, where Max Rose beat incumbent Republican Dan Donovan. And it was funny because Donovan came out and conceded, and the races hadn't even been called yet. He came out, and people were kind of taken by surprise, but he must have seen the numbers and knew it wasn't good. He gave a very classy speech, but that was a surprise. Staten Island is considered a conservative area of New York City, and certainly I don't think many people predicted Max Rose would win.
No, that's right, but I've been thinking about that race, which is interesting because sometimes if you have a rough primary, and certainly the Republicans had a rough primary, there are those people who are on the losing side on the primary who have not yet forgiven you and who either sit on their hands or vote for the Democrat. What do you think about that thesis?
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. And I think it could be, you know, there's two lines of thought. It could get you game ready for the general election, or it could hurt you and split the party. You know, Donovan certainly wasn't helped. But, you know, he also, let's not forget, he got last-minute help from the president, and that may have hurt him as well. I mean, the president just right now is not popular in New York. He's popular in pockets of New York, and we saw that play out with Chris Collins out in the Buffalo area. That's probably the most conservative district in New York, and Collins was the first member of Congress to come out and support Trump when he got into the race in 2016. But you know, the guy's under indictment for insider trading.
And still won.
And it was a close race, and Trump was doing robocalls. They were sending people in on his behalf. Steve Bannon went in. So that worked there. But overall, Trump was an albatross around the Republicans' neck.
Now, Ken Lovett, Amazon's coming to Long Island City, Queens. Yes, and depending on what you read in which paper, New York City and the New York State is giving Amazon up to $2.5 billion. Now, some people say $1 billion, but it's a lot of money. Now, all of a sudden, out of the West, like Lochinvar, comes Kirsten Gillibrand, who says she doesn't like the deal, which is going to mean that an early test of the willpower of Kirsten Gillibrand, who many people are mentioning for president, and Andrew Cuomo. You wouldn't want to tick off Cuomo if you were Gillibrand, would you?
No, you wouldn't. But, you know, this is just one of many things that they'll be chiming in on. Gillibrand has no real role here, and I just don't see anything. You know, she came out and said what she had to say, which, you know, a lot of progressives, people on the left, do not like this deal. So the irony about this deal is it's managed to do something you never thought you'd see. It's managed to unite the left and the right, because conservatives don't like it for the giveaways, and the left, you know, people even like Democratic Socialist, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's, you know, Congresswoman-elect from Queens, she came out against it, and they don't like the money going toward a major company like this, one of the richest companies in the world, and they feel that that money could be better spent. Cuomo and even the mayor, who in the past has not talked happily about Amazon, they said that they think in the long run this will make the state and the city a lot more money. It'll provide up to 25,000 jobs, and all these incentives are job creation based. So if they don't meet their quotas, they don't get the incentives. So they feel it's a good thing for the state and city. But there's a lot of people, a lot of Democrats right now who are coming out against it, including Mike Giannaris at his district, and they feel it's just too much money, and they feel that the local community was kept in the dark about this until it was announced.
So, will legislators get a pay raise?
I would guess yes. There's a panel right now made up of the state comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, the former state comptroller, Carl McCall, and two other people, and they're looking into this. And the feeling is, look, it's been 20 years. The question is, will it be a pay raise that brings them to a level that they could outlaw outside income, or are we looking at a first pay raise here, and then will they then bounce it up even more once they decide that it'll be a permanent professional legislature?
Who put those people on that panel?
That would be the governor and the legislature. It was part of a deal they cut as part of the budget last year, this past year.
Right. So how would you like to be one of those people sitting there and knowing that if you said no pay raise, that these guys in the legislature would say, okay, you're not getting anything from me for the rest of your life?
And the one who would really probably hurt in that regard is Tom DiNapoli, because he's still in office. And and DiNapoli is one of the most popular popular elected officials in the state. As a matter of fact, I think last I saw, he was a close second to Gillibrand in terms of the number one vote getters this year in New York. Gillibrand only had a few thousand votes on him, so that could change when everything's recounted and tabulated. But, 4 years ago, DiNapoli was the top vote getter. So, he could tick off a lot of powerful people who have helped him in the past by voting against a pay raise. I think right now the governor doesn't want to tick off the legislature. I think this is a foregone conclusion. The question is how much it'll be, not whether it will be. It's 20 years. Most people seem to think that's long enough.
So are we going to have major criminal justice reform in New York State? We see the president, even the president just signed something.
Yeah, I think that's going to be something, one of those things we might see early on or as part of the budget. I think you'll see bail and speedy trial and discovery reforms. I just did a story this week about public defenders calling for even more types of criminal justice reforms, but the Democrats have been chomping at the bit for that, and I think that's going to be one of the slam dunks coming into the session.
So all of a sudden, there seems to be some new wisdom on this. Why all of a sudden, across the whole country and in New York State, do you get all these people who are saying, yeah, our black population and others have been screwed for a long time? What led to this wisdom?
Well, I think the Democrats have been saying this for a long time and pushing for it. The Republicans have blocked it. They didn't want to be seen, especially by their base, as soft on crime. But in this case, I think nationally, it's kind of like an olive branch by Trump. He knows he has a Democratic House now. And so I think this is one of those things he's dangling out there. Yeah, we really should do something on this, trying to make sure that maybe there won't be as much gridlock as we all expect.
Let's talk a little bit, we only have a minute, about Ed Cox, a man who I have great respect for. He's been the head of the Republican Party, a thankless task if there ever was in Blue State, New York. There are those people who think he should go. Basically, I believe he's saying, I'm staying. You know, after all, he is Dick Nixon's son-in-law.
So, hell no, he won't go. Yeah, he told me last week that not only is he going to serve out his term that goes through September, but he wants to go for another term. Whether that's going to be feasible, I don't know. There's a lot of people already calling for his head. Eric Ulrich, a city councilman from Queens, he did an op-ed in the Daily News recently saying that the Republican Party's hit rock bottom and Cox needs to go. A lot of people think that Nick Langworthy, the Erie County Republican chairman, he's the next in line and that he wants it. So there's no mechanism to get rid of him before September, although people would like him to voluntarily move aside. But certainly he may face a challenge in September should he decide to seek another term.
We love you, Ken Lovett. Our guest has been columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, a fearless reporter, Ken Lovett. Ken, thanks for joining us. It's always great.
Anytime. Be well.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.